Can my emotions and my logic operate in a healthy partnership? Hello, I'm Mariette Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to a wide range of wellness professionals ready to inform and inspire. Today's topic is Hope Restored, how emotional logic helps you befriend your emotions. My guest is Annette Delaporte, social worker and international emotional logic training consultant from the Cape West Coast. Welcome, Annette.
Thanks, Mariette. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today.
And to our listeners, after our conversation, Annette will give us three tips on dealing with loss, and then it will be fun question time. Annette, please tell us a little about yourself and what you do.
That was my husband's best joke. You know, if people asked him, so what does your wife do? Then he would say, you know, first she was in Stikland Hospital, then she went to Weskoppies, which is two psychiatric hospitals in South Africa, and then she was in Sonderwater Prison and then in Paulsmoor.
Yeah.
And when their eyes really become wide, he would say, she did sleep at home every night. And for me, that was really the practical journeying out and mapping way of in which God for me mapped my life's calling, which is a scripture from Isaiah that says, heal the brokenhearted and set the captives free. And you cannot help anybody else to heal if you have not first engaged with your own healing process. So after those two psychiatric hospitals and two prisons, I then was my husband's right-hand woman, like my daughters say, sometimes his left-hand too, in building a pastoral care support system and doing training. So we focused on an organization, building an organization called Hospice Vision, which was about the pastoral care of the sick and the family in government hospitals. And we did amazing work. And I especially focused in COVID, but also before that, in the emotional support of the nursing staff in the hospitals, because, you know, they feel like the paint on the wall. Nobody sees them, but they are the ones that have to keep everything going. And then it was a year before my husband's death that I was introduced to emotional logic. And, you know, Mariette, for me, this is the holy grail. I just did better than Hamilton Ford because I can keep it and I can give it to other people. It is, for me, the most amazing and effective tool to help people understand their emotions. And when my husband committed suicide 4 years ago during COVID lockdown, this is what picked me up from the floor. This is what helped me with my faith to restore hope for life again.
Yes, and you and I have recorded an episode on how you coped with your husband's depression, which lasted for 35 years, and then with his death 4 years ago. And in this episode, you explain how much emotional logic meant to you. Now, Annette, the concept of emotional logic fascinates me because in our society, logic is the accepted currency, while emotions are often frowned upon.
So true. In a conference that I was a speaker on a webinar 2 weeks ago, I asked people to answer a question for me. And the question was, do you trust your emotions? And give a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And it was very interesting, that informal poll, because for a lot of people it was an immediate thumbs down. And unfortunately, I think the way we are trained in society to understand emotions is, well, actually, perhaps the problem is that we were never taught to understand our emotions. I said to somebody last week, I think I must just write a book and it will become a bestseller, because I've not met anybody on the planet who understand their emotions. Mm. And that is the structure that emotional logic provides. Because when you discover that there is a useful purpose for each emotion, it shifts your whole experience of it. I have a colleague in emotional logic in the UK, David DeLorenzo, and he has this beautiful statement. He says, anxiety, love it when we don't have a plan. And when we cannot link a sense of overwhelm or a feeling of anxiety and discomfort to a specific value that got hurt, then we simply become more overwhelmed and the anxiety escalates. And this is one of the keys we will talk about today, is how emotions are a valuable and valid source of information to inform you when you are feeling unsafe, uncomfortable, because the values according to which you operate are being violated in a conversation with somebody or in your inner conversation, your self-talk.
That makes such a lot of sense. Now, Annette, since emotional logic is quite new to South Africa, how would you summarize it?
I think the best way is with examples. If you do not have a concept of the link between your logic and your emotions, think of a situation in which your car broke down and you were in need of roadside assistance and you made a phone call. And then the person who answered the phone call was very rude to you. So now you're already stressed about your car that has broken down. You feel unsafe. Your sense of security has been hampered. And now this person is rude to you. And then once your problem has been solved, you will find yourself telling people that you get in touch with, your friends, your family. You won't believe how rude this person was to me today. And what that intense emotion of shock is telling you is that you have a high value for respect. The next one, which we've all experienced, you're in traffic and the next moment a car swerves in front of you. You jump on the brakes with your foot and you, with a screeching car, come to a halt. Your heart palpitates here in your throat. You break out in a sweat. And what you are feeling angry and shocked about is that the other person on the road did not follow road rules, that they endangered your safety and your life. And this experience is so much more intense if you have your children with you in the car. Mm. So that emotion of anger talks to you about an injustice. And our sense of justice required that we stick to the rules, that we show courtesy, and that we keep each other safe. And all of those values got violated in the instant of that almost accident. And that is the logic of your emotions, that they are always consistent in informing you when a value is violated, when an expectation of how somebody should react or should act is then actually turned upside down, and that person does not meet your expectation. So it becomes a whole new way of life. I remember once when my dog was sick and I was sitting in the waiting room at the vet, and in my mind I was already making a loss list of what will I miss when this dog is not there anymore. But I think to answer that effectively, we will first have to go through how does this process unfolds when somebody comes to see me for a counseling or when I take people through training, because I think I'm so excited about it. I might take you on a side road where we don't want to go right now. So let's rather look at your next question. Yeah.
But thank you very much for those lucid examples. I think I can already start connecting emotions and logic. Annette, where did emotional logic come from?
It was developed in the 1990s by a medical doctor in the UK. His name is Dr. Trevor Griffiths, and I will forever be thankful to him because this set of life skills has changed my life. He discovered in his medical practice that people will come to him with literally a pain in their heart. And as he spoke to them, they would talk about a loss, a family member that died. Then they would come 6 months later, and now they will have high blood pressure. And when he would talk to them, they will explain that they have lost their job. And he became aware that we do not deal with daily disappointments. And when we do not recognize something as a loss and as a disappointment, it happens that all of these things pile up. And, you know, emotions that we suppress or in our denial protection don't notice doesn't go anywhere. They stay in your body. And when you do not hear them, they can literally slow you down, and you can become physically sick because there is such a pile up of an inner storm, and then anything that goes wrong outside, actually that outer storm lands on an inner storm. And he then developed a method whereby he would say to his patients, "Don't tell me what you feel, show me." And they would unpack a set of emotion cards and sift through them to have a visual image of what you're feeling. And the word disappointment is such a key for us today, because our dreams are the appointments we make with our future. Walt Disney had such a beautiful statement. He says, "A dream is a wish your heart makes." And when those dreams gets broken or does not come to fruition, we experience a disappointment, because that appointment, that dream we had in our heart, has actually broken. And if we don't stop to look at it and deal with it, it just caused so much emotional turmoil, and it wastes such a lot of powerful emotional energy because we lose perspective and insight. And I think for me, what the gift of this method is that Dr. Griffiths has developed is to take people from a place of confusion to a new sense of clarity by understanding their emotions, how it links to their set of values, and how to understand how they problem solve, because sometimes our way of attempting to solve the problem of a loss can actually cause more problems. Something that I have developed in South Africa to bring it to the public's awareness that we have daily disappointments is I have a 2.5-hour webinar. I also have it on a recording for people who cannot attend a webinar. And what we're looking at is the daily disappointments we currently experience in South Africa with load shedding. For example, I would be doing a session with somebody, I would walk to my kitchen and I would absentmindedly switch on the kettle to make myself a cup of tea. The moment that light doesn't go on, I have a sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach and I go, Oh no, it's load shedding. So what I'm feeling in that moment is not joy. I am feeling disappointment because my need for that moment is not met. Somebody else has taken my power of decision-making away from me, and I don't have the freedom of choice to make myself that cup of tea. And of course, we are such resourceful people in South Africa, and we all made plans and have a little gas cylinder for moments like that. What I want to point out is how extremely important it is to become emotionally aware of our disappointments, because otherwise we live in such a sense of disappointment and it steals our quality of life.
Annette, what are emotions?
Emotions are messengers. They are like an alarm system going off. And their purpose is to inform you about an expectation that is not met, about your safety in a relationship when you are having a difficult conversation. And these messengers are like children. You can't shut a child up. I sometimes think this is the beauty of how God designed us, that an emotion will come knocking on the door until you hear it. And that purpose of that emotion, for example, if we look at shock, shock is where you sit back in your chair, where your mouth opens wide, your eyes go wide. And the purpose of shock is to tell you, stop what you're doing and find a safe place where you can calm down and make a plan how you're going to deal with this. And when each emotion becomes a safe place in itself, it is no longer an issue because your emotions are not your enemies. And if we can learn to befriend them and partner with them, the purpose is to process pain, process hurt. And emotions happens on the playing field of relationships. Relationships with other people, relationships at work, relationships in society, and our relationship with ourselves. And if we don't hear these emotions, if we shut them down, we miss out, we actually destroy our own quality of life.
I can now understand why you wrote on your website, I think, that you believe that emotions are neither good nor bad, but that they are useful.
What is happening is we are very judgmental about our emotions. And this is one of the things that Dr. Trevor Griffiths said. He said it is not good or bad, right or wrong. It is comfortable or uncomfortable. And when you think of an emotion like shock, we're immediately uncomfortable because experiencing shock means that something happened and at the moment I am not in control. If you think of anger, we immediately have an association of somebody who does an anger dump or who is bullying somebody else. But anger is a beautiful emotion that talks about justice. And the moment something is unfair, the moment something is unjust, anger will well up in us to give us the energy to do something to correct that injustice. And it is how we express our anger that makes it right or wrong. If you think of guilt, I have this picture of huge rocks that are bound to you and you're sinking to the bottom of the sea. But guilt is actually only inviting you to learn from your mistakes and saying, what can I do differently next time? And then depression. You can imagine, Mariette, having lived with my husband's chronic depression, which was actually a PTSD response from when he was a chaplain in the Namibian War. I wasn't friends with depression. It was something, it was a problem that I had to solve. It was a problem that I have to manage. It was an invitation for us to learn to understand depression as a health issue, as a mental illness. When we speak about depression in emotional logic, we're not at all referring to depression as an illness. We are referring to the healthy, uncomfortable human response that I am facing my limits and that perhaps I am expecting something impossible of myself. I always remember the first time my husband saw the card explaining the depression emotion. And he read that and he said, I never accepted that I have limits and I'm not going to start doing that now. Which meant that he always pushed himself further than his capacity was, which was an amazing drive that he had. Learning that depression can actually anchors me in what is my current capacity. And, you know, I have this joke and I say, one of the things I still struggle with is at the bottom of my Zoom picture, it doesn't say Superwoman. I'm so disappointed about that. I would really love it if I could just crack a whip and everything would be finished and would be dealt with and would be fixed.
Exactly.
But life doesn't work like that. So learning that I am human, learning to respect my emotions as the most valuable, accurate source of information, absolutely changed the whole way I interact with myself and with others. And what you can hear is that emotional logic is not a theory to me. It is something that it's become a way of life for me.
Yes. Would you like, Annette, to illuminate more of the key concepts of emotional logic?
Yes, I think it will be good to talk through what is the process that I follow when somebody comes to see me for a session. And I think for me, the one gift of the season of COVID was that it made it possible for us to work on a platform. And yeah, Zoom is actually for me such a gift. So I would mostly work on Zoom because after my husband's death, I issued myself a hermit permit, which is another way of saying that I allowed myself to face and embrace many uncomfortable feelings while I am finding a way to go forward. And if somebody make an appointment with me for a counseling session, we will do a few things. And the first thing is I love exploring with people what are their safe places, their safe activities, and their safe persons. Because that is our support systems. And when we have to make a plan how we are going to problem solve a situation, we need those support systems. Now, what makes emotional logic so different than ordinary talk therapy? As you know, I remember sessions with a psychologist and having poured out my heart and going away there, wishing I had something on paper of what just transpired. And that's exactly what we do, is you identify a specific problem that you're going to work with. And I'm going to use a personal example as I'm explaining, because that will help to land it for our listeners. So there will be 7 primary emotion cards. We call them stepping stones as we process a painful situation. And that will be shock, denial, anger, guilt, bargaining, which refers to our problem solving, depression, and acceptance. Now, those of you that are in the helping professions will listen to this and say, that sounds like the phases of grief of Dr. Kubler-Ross. And you're right. It was then taken by the Hospice Association of England, and they added shock and guilt to give us these 7 keys. But then we go into the detail. Am I feeling despair, or am I feeling irritation? And this is where the process is not only visual, unpacking what am I feeling about this, it is also kinesthetic, which means I'm bringing new integration between the planning center of my brain that has to decide, yes, I am feeling despair, yes, I am feeling anxious, no, I'm not feeling full of hate, no, I don't want revenge. And then in 10 minutes, you have unpacked the emotions and detailed feelings you have about the situation. And when my dog, my beloved Cinderella, Chow Chow dog, died in January, I sat down and I did a card pattern about what am I feeling. Because seeing it visually just shifts the whole process and gave such new insight. The second step is to then make a list of what am I missing? What are my losses? And with my dog, it was that she provided structure to my day, because I'm now a widow living in paradise on earth, which is Azerfontein in the West Coast. And in the morning, she would come and wake me up. And the chow chows make such yelping sounds. And with that gentle noise, I woke up and then let her out and 5 minutes later she would be back for another conversation about checking up. Are you getting dressed that we can go for a walk on the beach? And what I realized, the first thing that I lost when my dog died is structure of my day. Because in the afternoon at 5, she would come back when my voice became quiet after a Zoom session. And there's the same question, are we going for a walk around the block now? And suddenly there was no structure to my day. There was no reason to get up out of bed. And making a list of what I lost, what I'm missing, what I valued about having a dog has helped me to problem solve. And that is the third part, is to identify what can I do to address this problem. And of course, part of what happens when you lose a dog, just like when you lose a human, you lose companionship, you lose support, you lose the excitement of doing something together. And so part of my solutions was to sometimes in the week find a human to go for a walk with. I just don't put a leash around their necks. And also new structure to my day by going now 3 mornings a week to Pilates classes. So when I could understand what is the name of the loss, link it to a value, I could problem solve and restore my emotional balance.
That is fascinating, partly because it is so simple.
Yes, simple and powerful.
Annette, I've read on your website where you mentioned the whirlpool on emotions we may encounter. What is that?
Oh, how I yearn to have this knowledge for that long season of my life when my husband and I would have these conversations about depression. And do you remember those old gramophone records and they got a scratch on it and you would have like repeat of the same part of the song over and over again somebody got irritated enough to get up and actually move the needle a bit forward? An emotional whirlpool is a unique concept of the life skills that we learn in this process. And what is so beautiful about it is that it simply says we often experience conflicting emotions about a situation. Let me give a practical example. If I feel shock, I can make my eyes wide. I can feel how I pull back, so I can own that emotion. If at the same time, when I'm feeling shocked, I'm also feeling depressed because I'm realizing I am not superwoman. My name is Annette. I have limits. And facing those limits in a moment or a season of powerlessness is then a very hard thing to come to terms with. And then these two emotions can merge with each other so that when I'm feeling shocked, I'm depressed, and when I'm depressed, I'm feeling shocked. And learning to identify your emotional whirlpools and to go to the specific purpose of that emotion is how you become unstuck and step out of that whirlpool, because each emotion gives you a specific instruction. For example, shock will say, stop what you're doing, take 10 minutes to breathe and calm down, find a safe place or a safe person, and make a plan. The instruction of depression is, see your limits, and then that might allow you to stop trying for the impossible. And if you don't meet the purpose of the emotion will continue to knock on your door because you have not heard it. And when there is such a joint, that almost double bind of two emotions pulling you in different directions, you develop a specific response. So with shock and depression, we are experiencing fatigue, that sudden bout of fatigue where it feels somebody has pulled the plug and all your bathwater, all your energy has run out. And in the same way, just going to offer another one, which we often feel when we have a mix of shock and denial. Because in emotional logic, we don't badmouth denial. We say denial is there to protect us when the shock is too overwhelming. And it is also there to help us focus on a priority that you can do in this moment. And this shock and denial dance cause a lot of confusion because I feel so stressed and so doubting of myself because I'm actually hiding the shock. I'm actually avoiding the pain of dealing with whatever I've lost in that moment. And to learn how to put it on the shelf for now, focus on the current priority, but to come back later and to really understand what is happening here and how to step out of the shock denial dance into a space of clarity. And I can give a practical example. When I moved to Azefontein, I was still doing counseling for a company in Cape Town. And one day I was driving in to do physical sessions, and it was a heavy, heavy thunderstorm. I was literally driving 30 kilometers an hour. I could see two of the stripes on the road ahead of me. And I was so anxious and I was so angry at myself. How can I be so irresponsible to do this? What if something happens to me today? Who will look after Prince Charming and Cinderella? Who will look after my cats, Blackie and Biscuit? And finding then that although I have a lot of courage, I'm now in a season as a widow where my courage has to be married to facing my limits in depression, in that powerlessness, because that anchors me in wisdom of what I can do and what I do not have capacity for. Because courage on its own, if we have a lot of guts, can cause us to act irresponsibly. And I then had to realize that I cannot drive to Cape Town in this season anymore. And that's where I shifted and only worked on Zoom. And a practical example I have to give here is how I realized one of the things that I have so valued of my relationship with my husband was that we could soundboard big decisions. And I then realized, although I can't fetch him back from the death to have discussions when I have a problem, that value of support and talking and soundboarding about a big decision, I can take that value back in my other relationships with a couple who has been good friends and supporters, and also with my two adult daughters and son-in-laws. And in that way, when I anchor myself in the value the emotions has delivered its message, and I no longer need to feel overwhelmed because I'm anchored and I found a new solution.
Such clarity. It really is amazing. You've now proved that emotional logic is very practical, and you have talked about the visual aspect, the visual map, which helps us understand our emotions. Would you like to say more?
I think the visual map is the one key. After that, actually, what is for me The next very powerful tool is what we call a loss list. And to make that loss list and then read it back to somebody, reframed as the list of values, is like such a holy ground moment in a counseling session. And when people understand it, and coming back then, so on my loss list with Cinderella's death, it was companionship. It was having another living being in the house, structure to my day, an activity together in nature. And when I've made that list, I'm then able to say, I really value companionship, structure, planning, having an activity that I do outside in nature. And then when I've made that loss list and understand this is a list of my values, I could problem solve those values back one by one without the quick fix of going and getting another dog. Because I also realize that season is finished in my life now, and I actually want the freedom of movement of not having something or someone at the moment apart from myself to take care of. And so I also had to honor that need. And without naming what I've lost, there isn't that insight that can happen and that I can actually then have such clear values. And what I'm finding is that people shift from there into problem solving in such an easy way because there's clarity now. I remember this widow that I worked with, and she said, you know, the key thing my husband did for me is he was my tech support. And now when I get stuck, he did my accounts for me. So he was her whole backup system for her private practice. And when we could name the losses like that, we could link her. One of her safe people is her daughter, who also lives with her in a flat. And she has the tech savvy. And when she could lose the value of technical support from her husband and actually see, but in my resources, my daughter can step up in that value and give me the support and the ease of mind that I have somebody to call when something goes wrong technically. And that shifted the whole thing for her to such an extent that she said to me, you know, in 6 months after my husband's death, I attended 10 grief courses because I was so committed to understand my pain. But in 2 sessions with you, you brought me more clarity. And this is the complement of how effective this set of skills and tools work.
Would you like to mention more examples or case studies of how emotional logic has helped someone make sense of loss?
Yeah. When I do training and I teach this method, whether it is to somebody who does coaching in a business or whether it is a social worker or a psychologist, pastoral counselor, then when I start after the first session, it's usually 5 training sessions. And after that first session, I will do an individual session, a practical experiential session of 90 minutes with each of the participants in the course. Because it shifts it immediately from training to practical application. And people literally has the impact, the experience, the impact it makes, that it changed their lives in that 90 minutes. And then they can embrace the theory on a completely different level as we continue with the training. And one of the people in this training course is a very bright 22-year-old woman who lost her mum when she was 6 years old. And all through her life, everything was for her about performance. Everything was for her about making herself worthwhile to the aunt who was then her primary caregiver. And only when we made a list of losses, I mean, you can imagine losing your mom at 6. We made a list that was an A4 page. And usually if you make a list of losses, you're going to feel overwhelmed because, oh, look at all the things I've lost. But it is completely the opposite because it now becomes, just look at how you value independence, how you value support. And as we talked through that list, there was a physical sigh of relief. And when I met her in the training session the next week, she literally looked different than a week ago. Because all her life, she was carrying this deep, deep sorrow about losing her mother at such a young age. And in this one session, such healing, such clarity. Then I think teenagers are very often with the whole hormonal boost in such an intense turmoil of emotions. And I wanted to do something for them. But I must confess, I don't want to work with teenagers individually. But what I've done is I said, you know, there's often courses for parents, there's training for teenagers. What if we put parents and teenagers, and young adults for that case, together, and we take them through a 9-week process of becoming emotionally aware? Because if you're not aware of what you're feeling, you cannot do self-care. You cannot problem solve. And often, denial is like the lid on a refuse bin. Somebody told me a story the other day that in Germany, there are additional clamps that they close after they have put the lid of the refuse bin on, so that if it is blown over by the wind, nothing can fall out. And sometimes that is what happens to us, is when a situation is too painful, we close the clamps of denial in order to survive. The problem is that we then cannot spot any of the other emotions and we cannot process our pain. So in becoming emotionally aware, you know, a colleague of mine of the UK and I are busy putting this training course on videos because I think it is just so essential for us to have new insight. And this is also, I think, what happens when I deal with a group of people who work together in a business. In a business scenario, you bring in people with different personalities, different functions, different role descriptions, and very often their style of problem solving can cause an itch and a scratch. And if you can teach a group that has to work together to understand their emotions and to look at their style of problem solving, you shift the whole atmosphere in that group working together, which is just beautiful.
I think the clarity makes such a difference. Now, Annette, could you talk more about the course for teenagers? You said for teenagers and adults. Does it include their parents? How exactly does it work?
I've actually done an experiment with how I have put the group together, because it is about shared language for emotions. And there was in the current group that is ending in 2 weeks, I had two sets of sisters that are working together in business, and the rest was children. Yeah, as young as the age of 11, and the eldest teenager was, I think, 18, and then with a parent. because the reality in society is that so many couples are divorced and children are living with a specific parent. So a parent with a young adult or teenager, because the whole idea is that you attended to our training and then there is homework to do that takes you into half an hour conversation with each other before the next training. And I think this can work well for couples. I think this can work well for business associates. It can just work for everybody. Because when we can understand our emotions, that's actually our biggest problem, that we don't understand them. And then we feel overwhelmed. And then we're back at what David DeLorenzo says, anxiety, love it, when we don't have a plan. And then we just become more anxious. So everything is about understanding, becoming aware in order to partner with the emotion instead of opposing it.
Would you like to say more about the services you provide?
Yes, at the moment it is threefold. I love doing webinars for the South African population, specifically at the moment about dealing with the daily disappointment of load shedding, because it affects all of us. That is a 2.5 hour session for 250 Rand. And then if people cannot attend it in the time slots that I offer it, they can order a recorded video and actually watch it as a family, which leads to new awareness already, because I explained some of the basic tools. Then I have training courses for counselors that helps them and teach them to equip and use this specific method with clients. And they must then do a practical application and come back and we have a supervision session so that they can get that constructive feedback of what did I do well, what would I do differently next time, and this is the space where I get stuck. The supervision is very important for me. And then it's individual counseling. I usually say 18 plus. There are sometimes an exception. It's very important to me that it is a tool, a set of tools that people need to be able to learn. So counseling and training and counseling. I think that sums it up. And then also sometimes I'm invited to do work with a group in a business and teach them awareness of their own emotions and how to be more accommodative towards each other.
And your training also involves CPD points, not so?
Yeah, the continuous professional development points are a reality. I'm firstly focusing on my own profession of social workers and also then pastoral counselors. And that is what it is at the moment.
Annette, where can listeners find you? For instance, your website.
I believe in growing as a person, so it kind of became a theme, Grow with Annette. And that is my website, is www.growwithannette.co.za. And that links you to my email. I am quite willing to give people a cell phone number, and I prefer to make appointments on WhatsApp. And also that there is a source of information on my website. If it is people dealing with grief, people facing depression, there are a few recordings that Andre and I did. That is in Afrikaans. There is also a recording of a webinar training of the Northwest University that was recorded 2 years ago, which is free of charge available to people on my website. There is an ebook, and I think the last resource is to mention that when there is a group of people who want to do a grief circle, there is also 8 sessions where we work through grief. And grief is not only when a person dies. It is also the grief we experience when we lose our job, which is linked to our sense of purpose. So that is an additional resource that I offer.
Thank you. And I will attach the link to your website to the podcast, and I will include your cell phone number in the podcast notes.
Good idea.
Annette, it's time for your three tips on dealing with loss.
The first thing is that when we experience an emotion and we cannot link it to a value that was violated, that emotion will feel overwhelming and it will take us on an emotional roller coaster. Identifying which value got hurt, like I did in the example with my dog, companionship, daily routine, structure. If I can name the value, I'm much better equipped to then step into tip number three. Find a small solution of something that you can do that will assist you to deal with this situation you are facing.
Thank you, Annette. Are you ready for your fun question?
Ready or not, you're gonna bring it on.
I am. Annette, if you were a hat, what would you be made of and what would you look like?
I would immediately want more than one hat. I think living at the West Coast, where the wind can sometimes be quite chilly, a warm hat of cuddly wool is at the moment a safe object to protect my ears against the chilly wind when I go for a walk on the beach in the morning.
Yes, and which color, Annette?
Oh, my favorite color is red, and I'm beginning to wear it again.
That's good news. Thank you, Annette. I think the one word that kept on popping up in my head while we were talking is clarity. So thank you for clarifying this tool for getting our emotions and logic to work together. Thank you for your time.
I think the one last thing I want to mention is that this process is so effective that I was able to call my house Hope Restored. And that is really the healing, the level of healing that emotional logic brought to me. Thank you, Mariette.
Such a pleasure. And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. I'd be honored if you'd subscribe to this podcast series where you download your podcasts. And if you found this episode meaningful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes. And for free articles and podcast episodes on how to live a happier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, just search for Mariette Sneeman, journalist. Calm, Clear and Helpful is compiled, hosted and edited by me, with original music by Mart-Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.